So I once heard a small comment that was supposed to come from my Rabbi Nachman, who said, what is life? Life is like an onion. You peel it, you peel it, you peel it, and what's left at the end? Tears. And I think we may be feeling a bit like that. The title of the talk is Love That Breaks the Walls That Imprison Us. And all the Dharma practice, whether it's a heart practice or whether it's a more consciousness-oriented practice, vipassana, is meeting places that we're stuck and breaking those boundaries. Meeting, knowing where we're stuck, knowing our limits, and moving those limits. And there's some... Our limits are not really personal. We take them personally. Our fears and concerns and our worries and our sense of I can't go there and this is all too this and it's all... It's just we're born in a body. So the peacock, Tavas, beautiful peacock, as it walks past, it was probably saying, I wish I was a little sparrow. They're so light and small. Why have to carry this huge tail with me? It's so heavy. Look at these little birds that are flying. I want to be one of them. We're born in a body. It's not a joke. And we do arrive in this moment quite wounded. And... as we said before, some of those wounds are really experienced in the heart, engraved in the heart, and quite deep. And in a retreat, they will come up as hindrances, needs, wanting to escape, wanting to be better, wanting something to be different, wanting... or not wanting things, or all sorts of states of mind, heart, like, you know, the tiredness, the agitation, the restlessness, the something, I want to escape from this body-mind. And in a, of course, a metta-retreat, all of this is kind of on steroids. These hindrances, you know, buribua, because it's the heart, and the heart is wild and strong, and the tears come. Vipassana retreat, we can say, can frustration, I restlessness, when in a metta retreat, it's, well, you know, anger and tears and so on. It's got that heart power in it. So, it can feel like a volcano sometimes, Hargash. And something is also kind of right about that, because we are not in control. We are working so hard in our life to be in control. Our whole life, you could say, is being busy with being controlled in some way. So my life will be okay, better, this. Comfort zone, you know. And something about a metta retreat also, and our heart, is really wild. And it tells us we're not in control. And we also need to appreciate that. And I don't mean to control the heart, but I mean to... be wise about that heart energy. So it can, we talk about, let's put it this way, in a Vipassana retreat, we talk about silence and quiet and calmness and so on. And you know that there's a cartoon in the newspaper that I once saw that woman was sitting there bubbling with thoughts and the distractions and crazy mind and going here and going there and concerns and so on. And after 3/4 of an hour, the teacher comes over and says, "Wasn't that peaceful, my dear?" No, it wasn't. And the same here, even more. And the image that Goenka uses, which is a nice image, is that metta practice is like drops of cool water on a hot plate. And as the drop goes down, it goes pshew. And then another drop goes and reacts, another drop on the hot plate, it goes pshew. But slowly, slowly, the hot plate cools down drop by drop. And so the hargash, the volcano, and by the way, don't feel that you have to have one. Those of you that are feeling calm and nice and so on shouldn't say, there's something wrong here. there should be a volcano inside. Say thank you. At this moment, you don't know about tomorrow, but at this moment, you know, just enjoy sukha, not dukkha. So the phrases are strong. And it just needs the wisdom to know that. To work with phrases is strong. To work with a mantra is strong. I've been in India with these crazy sadhus. I was living with them for a year in 1976 and on the banks of the Varanasi, the Ganga on Varanasi. And what they said about mantras, you wouldn't believe. They said, we're not allowed to say this mantra because it can kill someone next to us. They believed mantra was so powerful it could kill someone, it could do anything. And understand it, words have a power in the mind. And so phrases have a power. I don't mean it's power like that, but they do have a power. And so they kind of add, they trigger the heart, they trigger something, they bring kind of stimulation to heart energy. And that's what we need, actually. So just like mindful awareness, the Vipassana works with hindrances, namely restlessness and so on, the miksholim, the hindrances that we know, by seeing their basic emptiness, by seeing that they come and go, by disidentifying, by stepping out and being able to hold them in attention. And standing back. And by the way, I saw in the psychological or therapy work of ACT, of acceptance and commitment therapy, and this nice word, which I'd never seen used before, for this power that we have to step back, which we're using here as well, to step back in order to see. And we can call it disidentification, ihizdahut, but to step out of the story. It's what we're doing in all meditation has that. But in this, in the act, they were using the word defusion. Defusion, fusion like fusing together, joining together, so undoing. And Achan Chah had a nice image about that and said that the consciousness is usually working in life like milk, but we don't know what's going on in the awareness, and here we can call it citta, mind-heart. We don't know, we just are it. So if we're angry, if someone makes us angry, ilbon, offended, we just be it, we react, we don't even know it's going on. And he said meditation is like separating milk into the oil and the water. and into two phases, and it's quite a nice image, and namely the observer and the observed, or the witness and the phenomena, the what's happening. So metta adds another dimension to this. Metta adds another big aspect to all of this. And as with vipassana and the hindrances, the first thing is to be friendly with our shedim, with the waves that are coming up in the heart, to be friendly with our sorrow. It's all a practice, and sometimes we here we're sitting and feeling, well, waves of and the tears come sometimes, that we feel it's strong and overwhelming and so on. We can give metta to that. We can give metta to our troubling thoughts. We can give metta to the heart that is telling us its pain. We can give metta to the heart that's telling us its joy, of course. But give space, be friendly with our demons. Reminds me the some beautiful quotes. One of my favorite books about all of this is the Diary of Etty Hillesum, which many of you know. But the one sentence there that's just remained with me, which is that she says, if you give sorrow the space that it asks for, the space that it needs, you will find yourself fully living a rich and beautiful life. We're giving sorrow the space that it needs. And there's something that we're doing here. So we can firstly allow and be friends with our experience, our heart experience, whatever it is. The image of some of you here are from Clil, and you all know about Khazire Bar. We talked about it in the staff last night, wild pigs. And they kind of got a monster sense about them, the sound they make, this kind of, and they're so big, and 300 kilo kind of, and they break through everything, and they just totally destroyed it. My chicken one night, my chicken shed. They broke doors, they break walls. But now and then, someone says, you know what? They also need your love. And to see this 300 kilo wild pig going, and you say, it's not a monster, it's just like, you know, you and me, and it also wants our love and our kindness. And absolutely everything in this living world needs that love, and especially us. So when things are difficult, we forget that. But the practice is to, exactly like Rabbi Nachman, to lekalef, to peel the layers of conditioning, hatnaya, the layers of life story, the layers of our woundedness that is engraved, that is there in the heart, and peel it off, see it and peel it. We might need patience, we might need love, we need all the tools we can. We might need to go through a period, and we might say, okay, today is a basa day, we'll see about tomorrow, but there's always a mango in the evening. And we might, every trick in the book sometimes we'll need for this. Slowly, slowly we unpeel, and whether it's vipassana or metta, it's unpeeling the conditioning, unpeeling and moving the boundaries, and we keep letting the layers come and let them go. And actually, as William Blake said, We can kiss them as they fly by. We can kiss them. These layers of human experience. William Blake said it about joy. He said, don't get stuck on joy. Kiss the joy as it flies by. But that applies to everything. Kiss the experiences as they come up and they fly by. So, because all emotions are responses to the world, then all emotions are connect us to the world. So anger, for example, is a protective response. We respond to the world by anger when it's threatening us. That is still a response. That is still connecting. That is still engaging with the world. And so the emotions are like they're what sort of vibrates when we meet experience. And the emotions are. And so just don't forget that under the anger is love. Under every emotion, there's another one. Under every feeling, under the tears, will be the joy. So I know that layers is a rather mechanical view. It's like a bit like, you know, the layers of the peeling of the onion is a rather physical image. But there is some truth in that, that under things, they look different. Under the anger is love. Why? Love of protection. I'm protecting myself. I'm holding myself precious. I'm stopping threat. The shield of a samurai is beautiful. Our shields can be beautiful. Well, it may be painful, it may be anger, it may be this, it may be protection, but there's no reason to be against anything, including our shields. Shirion. So in this case, metta and vipassana all work together, because if we touch the heart, it gives power to the mind. If we engage the heart in the practice, then also the mind, the consciousness is empowered. Joy is one of the biggest sources of our capacity to deep samadhi. Samoji, it's called in the tradition, to gladden the heart, to make the heart glad. And we find that we can go further than we know, because of the glad heart will allow us to go beyond our limits. And so they work together. The loving heart can help us to go more deeply into concentration, into samadhi, into meditation. The meditation helps us to open the heart. They work together. And sometimes in the tradition, metta is called mindfulness or awareness, because its citta is one thing, mind, heart. It's true in this retreat we are concentrating on heart, but they are kind of in dialogue all the time, as you know yourself. In the group today and every day, there is this discussion, how much I am with the body and mindful awareness, and how much I should work with the phrases. It's a legitimate question. How much is hard to give an answer, because how much is a kind of quantity. And we're not in that world here. It's not about kamuyot. Which reminds me, just before I came here, I had a talk with my good friend Yisrael in Clil. And he said, anytime anyone asks me any question with the word kamut in it, I say, I never answer a question that has that word kamut or kamut. Or kamuyot, measuring. I understand that the Buddha was exactly the same, by the way. He didn't like that whole. So it's hard to say, it's hard to dis, we have to, that's the dance we are here, working with mindful awareness, taking steps and feeling ourselves quiet and concentrated, then letting the phrases come in a very natural way. We play with that. I can't tell you how much this, how much that. But there's a quote from the Buddha that said, "No better mindfulness in this world. There is no better way to live in this world than the practice of metta. It is the path to awakening." In other words, the heart practice and the mind practice are equal in our journey to awakening. The Buddha didn't say mindful awareness of working with consciousness, emptiness is up here. Metta is down here. And you'll find that in many, many teachers. Thich Nhat Hanh says that the next Buddha will be the Buddha of love, Maitreya. Same word as metta. Could be. I think we're in a situation in this planet where we really, really need it. We really need it. And the Buddha of love, just, where is she? Yalla. Maybe it's one of you. Or maybe it's all of you. Metta is based on the power of intimacy, kirva, closeness. It's based on togetherness. And we all have it. And we all want each other to be happy. We want ourselves to be happy, but deep down we want each other to be happy too. There's something very, very basic. The basis of metta is empathy, togetherness, being together with. And one of the places that help us in our metta practice is the sense of, actually, in compassion practice, metta practice, doesn't matter, all of the Brahma Viharas, is similarity. If we feel that the person next to us is the same as us, is not so different, they also want to live, they also want to be happy just like us, they also don't want pain, they also don't want to die. Suddenly it looks different. This person next to us can give us a hard time, can be shouting at us, there can be conflict. And the minute we see that person is like me, the whole picture can change and we're in a place of metta and compassion. So one of the keys to opening the heart of the Brahma Viharas, any of them, is the sense of sameness or the sense of, you know, we're all in the same Tevat Noach. We're all there together. And we're more similar than we realize. We have a sense that we're a separate person, but there's a lot more that we have the same than we have difference. We're busy with differences, but there's a lot that's the same. And if we feel that, with that immediately helps us to touch the heart of Brahma Viharas, of metta. So both awareness and metta push our boundaries, as I said at the beginning. And especially, like I mentioned, that you can't measure these things, there's no kamuyot, you can't kamuti, it's not measurable. There's no ruler which you can measure metta. the love. Love cannot be measured. The mind wants to measure, but love cannot be measured. And that's why the Brahma Viharas, their definition in the Buddhist teaching is the immeasurable. They are unmeasurable. And it's expressed again and again and again. These powers are beyond measurement. The mind wants to measure things. The mind of control. These are uncontrolled. They are unmeasurable. That's their definition. And that's why they're called Brahma Viharas. Brahma is God world. And Vihara is a kind of palace. Or not even palace, but a beautiful dwelling. So, celestial Endor. Endor in the sky. That's what they're called. The Brahma Viharas. That's their translation. So it's non-personal. There's something about it which is non-personal. Even though we feel, you know, it's my story is making me cry or making me... But there's something about all the Brahma Viharas, if you touch them, if you go again and again, and that's our practice. We are learning to apply the Brahma Viharas to non-personal life, just life, so that we're just radiating it, like I said, in the peace walks, to this flower, to this grass, to this insect, to this policeman, to this sky, to the clouds, to ourselves, to our feet, to our hands, to our thoughts, to... Where does it stop? It stops nowhere. So that's the movement. It's not personal. And that's why it breaks boundaries, because the boundaries are always me. So awareness practice, vipassana, breaks the boundaries because showing that they are empty. We can't find them. If we try and sort of really look and try and, what is this person? We keep just seeing transparency. Shakuf, this person. Where is this person? I'm trying to find the basis of this person. What's this person here? Yeah, you can say this face, this DNA, this behavior, this house. I live in Ramat Gan. Okay. But where is this person? Where do I find this person? The mahut, the essence of this. And we just can't find it. The Buddha said, how do you recognize an enlightened Buddha, enlightened person, an enlightened person? You recognize them because you can't find them. And the Buddha said that. And so awareness will show us that this person is not solid and a box and closed inside of boundaries and walls and so on. The more we look, the more it becomes open and free, and I don't really like the word empty, but should we say fluid, like liquid. We don't know where we are as a person. We're just made of a million things. Million impressions, so where is the one that says me? So that's the awareness takes us. Love pushes the boundary in a bit of a different direction. It says, love says, there is no solid person in the middle of things because we are everything. So awareness tends to say we are not findable, and love tells us we can't find ourselves because we're everything, because just metta, every, you know, like I said, every plant, everything. And it's a beautiful quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj about this, which some of you know. Wisdom teaches me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Between the two, my life flows. Wisdom tells me I am nothing. Love tells me I am everything. Between the two, my life flows. So in our practice these days, in our daily experience, we use the phrases as triggers to the heart. We keep going with them even if they are like drops of cool water on a hot plate. And we're very open to what happens. The heart is expressing what it needs to express. It can be delight, it can be ecstasy, it can be pain, it can be tears. It can be many things. But I do recommend little breaks in the phrases to see the ripples, like throwing a stone in a pond, a pool of water, and watching the ripples. So the phrase, the mantra, would be like a throwing a stone in a pond, and then you watch what happens in the body-mind, because it's a way of getting close and sensitive to what the heart is telling us. Nevertheless, another place where we're going to meet boundary is boundaries in the world. And it's all very well talking about immeasurable love. So we love and love and love, and then we get slapped on the face. Someone comes and says, bah. And then we say, I can love, but not this one, not this person. I can love my children, but not the neighbor's children, are always screaming. Still a child, but no, this child, my child, yes. That, no. This group, yes. That one, no. This person, yes, because they smile at me. That one, no, because they shout at me. This one, because they give me back. I love if I'm loved back. If I'm not loved back, then my love dries up. So love is a boundary that we feel we keep meeting in our love, is a boundary of the limits to our love, to our heart. And it's exactly what we're doing here in this retreat, is pushing those limits step by step, without measuring, without goals, but just being aware that we're pushing the boundary a bit every time. And it's okay that we find those limits. I love Atko, up to here, that's my limit. Fine, that's being a human being, that's what I said, born into a body. Survival mind, what stops love is survival mind, protection. We love up to here, but if we don't get love back, we feel rejected, we feel not protected, not held, not loved, and then our love stops. Just know that, get a sense of what that means for us, without pressure to do it, to make some kind of artificial, new agey, total lovey-dovey. It just, we're more in the truth of things here. Without, so yes, up to here, then my love stops. It turns to anger, or it turns to protection, or it turns to resistance, or it turns to irritation. Fine, just stay there. Go to that place of fear, actually. It's usually fear. That the self feels vulnerable at this place, and then the love stops. Go to that place. That's where love develops beyond the boundaries. Love always develops when it meets resistance. We are developing. Tipuach. That's what we are. This is what we've been talking about. Tipuach. It's developing a quality. And how do we develop a quality? We develop it when we meet the end, the limit. So if we feel the anger coming, the irritation coming, the resistance coming, say thank you. Just like in Vipassana, we meet dukkha, we say, thank you, that's our teacher right now. So it's same with the work with the heart. We can always switch on that it's always available to us, that place of meeting the boundary and then say, wait a minute. We've talked about some of the ways this can be done. The sameness, for example, that we are the same as others, and suddenly we find we're with them, not against them. Or we can be, there's always a switch that we can do from the heart. Sitting in the traffic in Pekak on the way to Tel Aviv, it's taking you hours to get to work, and you get more and more frustrated and irritated and restless. But all of a sudden you see someone next to you in the car, next to you, who is frustrated and irritated and fed up, just like you, standing in the Pekak. And at that moment the whole thing can switch and you feel compassion. I am like them. We are together in this situation, in this gazer, Tevat Noach, in the Mabul of the traffic to Tel Aviv. We're all together in it. And suddenly the heart can change the situation. And then we've moved our boundary a little bit at that moment. And we can always do it. In our life, shall we say, in our daily life, we may not know the compartments, the machlokot, the separate practice of heart, practice of mindful awareness. They may come together. And I think this is important because in our life in general, and I'm talking about our life as a development of our inner freedom, they will usually come together. The awareness and heart will come together. And there is one word in the Pali which I just become more and more interested in this word because it expresses the way they work together. And I think I've said this before, it's apamada. And I know, you know, in my life of 40 years of practice, there's been times when I get really obsessed by this word in the Pali that says everything, kind of, and then I drop it and start another word that says to me, wow, that's amazing. Because these words in Pali, by the way, because of the mumkhiyut, the expertise, the skill of the Buddhist teaching about inner life, there's no teaching in the world that I know anyway that is so skilled and so sophisticated and so deep and so full. And you can see it in the language. Just one word says so much about states of mind, heart. And apamada is one of them. And the Buddha said it's a really important quality because it's like the footprint of an elephant. The footprint of an elephant are akiva of an elephant is this size, and all the footprints of all the other animals can fit inside. And what he said is apamada is so big as a practice that all the other practices of the Dharma can fit inside it. So, you know, that's a pretty big claim. So apamada means heartful attention, care, taking care. And we've talked about this before. When the Buddha said, how do you find steadiness of being an island to yourself in the stormy seas of life? He didn't say be mindful, he said apamada, be mindful with care, with caring, So caring mindfulness is actually more, it's got more juice in it than just mindfulness, which is what we talked about before, remembering to be aware, remembering to be free, remembering our inner freedom, and that's aspect of it. But in daily life, apamada is really a very good description of putting the both together, taking care, paying attention to what is needed, paying attention to what is harmonious, paying attention to what is wholesome. It means everything has values. It's a practice is not just a kind of practice like developing skills, of inner skills. It's actually a way of healing. Apamada. Look it up. A way of mind and heart together, healing ourselves, healing the world, bringing benefit. In the tradition it says, apamada will bring benefit to you and all future generations. Which is very beautiful, and we mustn't need it right now. I don't know what the future generations are going to have to face. So, apamada is where we bring heart and mind together, and I can see, and we can sense it in our practice. So, in this retreat, it's more heart-oriented; another retreat, it's more mindful-oriented. But our whole journey, we can say, is attention to what's needed, what's right, what's fitting, what's wholesome, what's healthy, and what's awakening, what's bringing awakening. And we need it. And this quality helps us not to be victims of change, but to be agents of change, to make change in the world. This is the quality that is needed to make change in the world, apamada. So thank you, we'll just take a couple of minutes of quiet. So, עכשיו זה שמונה ועשרים, וזמן להליכה, ותשע, נפגש פה עוד פעם למדיטציה האחרונה של הערב.